Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, mostly on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. This is Michael Veazey of the 10K Collective, and I'm going to be delighted to welcome Aaron O'Sullivan of Systems Culture Impact to the show. Aaron deals with outsourcing, which is a very important thing for people who are wanting to go from a certain level where you still got stuck, and you can even find your revenue going backwards if you're focusing on the wrong things. And at that point, you definitely need to be thinking about outsourcing. So Aaron, welcome to the show. A very important topic.
Hey, Michael, thanks so much for having me on board. Really excited about today's session.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to have you back. And it's an important topic, as we said, for people who are and got the growing pains, and it can actually become a real barrier. So tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, your background personally or as an Amazon seller as well.
Absolutely. So I started in 2013 selling our own brands, private label brands on Amazon, and things started to go really good. And, you know, I was like a kid in a candy shop, starting launching new products and opened up new marketplaces, and went a bit crazy. In 2014, because I had so much on my plate, you know, the brand started to take a bit of a plateau and then a bit of a dive, and I was freaking out. I kind of didn't know what to do. You know, it took me a while to kind of join the dots, but you need systems and you need a team in place for you to continue to grow. And that really came to me, that insight came to me through working with some large teams and helping build some large teams in the Philippines. You know, it was my job to build all the systems and processes and you kind of nurture a team culture to drive forward, you know, 10 or so brands. So that was how I got my kind of start in systems and team and implementing them to get things off people's plates. Yeah, we just been working with 7-figure sellers, helping them get the operations off the plate so they can focus on profit generation, things like inventory management, customer service, and bookkeeping. That's kind of where we're at today.
Excellent. So I guess it's like a lot of the best businesses. You start off by scratching your own itch, or to put it another way, you're your own first customer because you've got a problem. You learn to solve it and then realize that you're not the only person with that problem. So I think it's a good hint whether you're starting out just creating your own Amazon products or indeed creating a service. It's the same thing, right? It's just always good to really be answering a real need rather than just coming up with something off the top of your head. So very reassuring that you've been there and done it yourself. So obviously, you know from firsthand experience. So tell me then, the first question, which is not just the naive question it sounds like, do we actually really need to outsource? I mean, the other day in one of the masterminds I run, we had somebody who's doing, at least £1.2 million a year or something like that, probably quite a bit more in good years. And he's just him and his business partner. They haven't actually got a VA at all. It's not because they don't know they exist or haven't worked with them, but they haven't felt the need for it. So is it something we really need?
It's a great question. It comes up often, but I think the answer is usually pretty simple. You know, if you are doing everything yourself, it's going to be holding you back from focus on the profit generation activities that enable you to grow your business to a place where you can, you know, take more time off. You can create the legacy that you want to create in the world, whether it's just helping your family, whether it's building a movement around your products and brands that can change all of, you know, a lot of customers' lives. But if you do not outsource, and it's going to prevent you from doing that. And frankly, I think if you don't grow a team, it's going to be one of the most lonely, challenging endeavors that you ever go, you know, forth with. It's kind of like any successful sports team has a real solid team behind it. And, you know, that is the same, you know, with any business, any successful business that, you know, that we all remember, all the most, you know, legendary business people that you've ever heard of always had a solid team around them. You're going to reach the capacity at which you can continue to grow your business because you are maxed out with all of the operations, all of the day-to-day, all of the firefighting. My answer is kind of absolute. It's, you know, you will 100% need a team in place. You don't have to start there. You can start with just outsourcing parts of a process or parts of a system. You can get people per minute these days. You don't have to go and oh, I have to employ somebody and, you know, have a big office. And all, you can just start with the process. One thing that you want to get off your plate. Yeah, that's kind of where I would start. Excellent. Hiring processes out, contractors, and then move into hiring a team which is full-time for you.
Okay, so yeah, that's, you've made a very valid point. So one of the reasons people question it is probably because the question they're asking in their mind is, do I need to outsource an entire role, hire, you know, a full-time person, or outsource a ton of stuff and create this whole team? And your answer is, well, yeah, you should outsource, but that doesn't mean you've got to hire full-time. You could just be, you know, micro-hiring. And that's a very, yeah, it's very wise, because I think that if you make the barrier to entry for something too big, people just never do it. For the newbies to the market, it's like, let's go from nothing to one private label product in one go, which is why I try and always encourage people to try things out on a small level. And I guess for more established sellers, it's the same thing. If you're moving into outsourcing first time, you don't just go full time. So that's a very good point. So the next question that comes up is, at what point then should we start outsourcing? Because is it when you're just doing tiny numbers, your business can't really handle any extra overhead? But there comes a point where there's that balance between the overhead addition versus your time and growing the business in the future. Mm-hmm. What would you say is that kind of point where you need to start outsourcing?
As we mentioned, you can start hiring out particular parts of a process. I think it's really important to immediately, you know, as your business, as you start to get some sales and starts to get some revenue come in, what things that you ultimately don't like to do or not good at, or you can outsource for way less than your potential hourly rate that you bring to the business in value. So I believe we should start outsourcing as soon as you start generating some revenue, start bringing some money into the business. You will be able to understand the things that you're spending time on, whether it's a personal thing, whether it's, you know, hiring a cleaner so you don't have to spend 2 hours a week cleaning your house, or whether it's, you know, going to Amazon. You know, we're all in the Amazon space. If you haven't got your most of your stuff automated on Amazon in terms of products that you need delivered to your house, that's a quick and easy win you can get going with to free up some time. But it could be anything from having a cleaner come around your house, or whether it's in offloading part of your customer service or part of your inventory management. Really, there's no time too early. As long as you've got a product and, you know, you're bringing in some revenue, you can afford to start outsourcing a process, or, you know, a part-time person. They don't have to be full-time. They don't have to be in-house. They can be virtual and, you know, literally contracted in, you know, like on demand.
Yeah, makes sense. So really, you're saying, I guess, as early as possible. And I have to say, looking back, I wish I'd started outsourcing stuff earlier. It's funny you should mention outsourcing cleaning, because I've had somebody in to do just like the washing up, really, which is not a big deal, but it takes me about half an hour a day because we eat a lot of food and drink a lot of coffee in this house somehow. And yeah, it just keeps striking. Every so often I have the discipline to hire somebody in, and then magically I'll get another podcast out the door, which brings, you know, revenue and brand awareness and stuff, which no amount of washing up is ever going to do. So you're right. Yeah. It's not necessarily just business. It's just winning back time, right? That's
exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's services for everything. There's, you know, I use ZipJet, which is London based. So it's like laundry. They pick up and deliver your laundry each week. There's TaskRabbit, which is, you can get anything done. You know, you want a flat pack furniture built, you can just hire somebody for like, you know, £10 an hour or something. Amazing. That's where I get my cleaners from. And yeah, everything in between. Everything is at your reach nowadays in terms of hiring out people per minute, per hour on anything you want. So really take advantage of that. Some places to check that out: TaskRabbit, ZipJet, like I mentioned. There is GetMagic, which is GetMagic's an awesome company. It's based over in San Francisco. They have per minute VAs. You can have a business account or you can have a personal account. You can offload things to them, you know, super cheap, and, you know, get things delivered to you. Anything. They could set reminders on your phone. They can text you to pick up your children, anything you want.
Yeah, I like that.
So just so, because yeah, you obviously don't want to forget that.
No, that would be bad. I've actually used AirTask as well, which is, I think, an Australian-based company, but that's where I found a cleaner from, because TaskRabbit, somebody had mentioned to me, and I found AirTask was good. But anyway, I mean, you know, there's lots of services.
Yeah,
I guess
absolutely.
We just Google it. I mean, we're going to have a bunch of links to put in the show notes already. But so coming back to Amazon, I like the idea that it's not just about business. It's not just about all or nothing. It's like you can start immediately and you can outsource on mundane daily tasks. And I'm really like that. I really like the fact that I was sitting here doing a podcast one day when somebody's next door taking care of the washing up. It's a great feeling. If you haven't done it, personally, I love it. I know some people are paranoid letting people in the house and whatever. I just loved it. But there you go. So the next question then, coming back to the Amazon space, what do we outsource? And then what do we outsource first? And so let's deal with the what things could we outsource? Let's deal with that question first.
We as leaders, as business owners, we have a ton of things on our plate. And there's a lot of stress, frankly, and pressure. If you're taking a step out there, you're running a business, you're taking care of everything, providing for your family. So you're going to, this is not just like a one-off thing. You need to constantly become addicted to removing things off your plate. One of the things we always have our clients do, and I think we talked about it maybe a year ago on the podcast, is always, you know, tracking your time regularly. It doesn't sound sexy, but what it does, it completely, you know, changed the game for you in terms of how productive you are, where, you know, the amount of value that you can bring to the business, because it creates awareness of where you're actually spending your time. So that will reveal all to you if you have a clear way to track your time on a daily basis. So a tactical way to do that is just have a spreadsheet open, and every time you switch task, every time you change to do anything, whether it's look at your phone, whether it's do the washing up, whether it's, you know, respond to a customer email on Amazon, or whether it's contacting a supplier over in China, every time you switch task, track it in terms of the time and how long it took you. And, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks, you're going to have an absolute, you know, absolute clarity of, you know, what do I want to get rid of off this list? Because without that, you're not going to be 100% clear. The data speaks for itself. It's absolutely kicked my backside. It does every time. The first time I'd done it, it was like, you know, I thought I was really productive, and it was quite humbling actually to do it, because it was very far from the truth. That's what I would highly, highly recommend you do that to get going. And then you build it in as a system into your business. So you do it periodically through the year. So you'll constantly have to evaluate where you're working and identifying on that list, what is not bringing value to the business? What could you outsource? What part of that could you hand to somebody else? And eventually, you know, you'll move from contractors to having a part-time person, whether that's in, you know, local to you or overseas, and then, you know, eventually go to full-time. But that's what, you know, first and foremost, to gain that clarity, you need to have a clear way to track and measure where you're spending your time.
Makes a lot of sense. It really does. And the thing is that the act of measuring, as Peter Drucker, the management consultant, who I think was just one of the most really useful management consultants. A lot of people write very fancy books that then turn out not to be very useful the next decade. But he said, what gets measured gets done, right? And if you don't measure time, like you don't measure money, famously businesses go broke. You know, if you're not measuring your money, we'll come to the bookkeeping question in a second. But I mean, yeah, if you don't measure time, you don't know how you're spending it. And you're right. I use a system called Toggle, T-O-G-G-L. I don't know if you've used that, but I'm like,
yeah, it's great.
I try and be rigorous now. I try and be really anal about tracking my time so I can really look at the statistics at the end of a week and go, yeah, I didn't feel that project moved forward very much this month, and I feel frustrated about it. And like, no wonder, because I spent 3 hours on it this month when I mentally spent 20 hours worrying about it. But it's very, very easy for a solopreneur, particularly. I just find you think about something a lot, but you don't actually sit down and, you know, whatever it is, map out the processes, send the emails, you know, place actual physical orders, whatever. And I think a reality check in terms of at least a week of being really, really ridiculously over measuring, I think is really incredibly powerful. So having done it, I agree with you. I'm not a naturally very structured person. So I think for me, it's particularly important.
Well, it's, you know, it's not just you, Michael. If you think about most business owners, they're visionaries, they're leaders, they just want to make stuff happen. Mm. You know, for the most part, the details and things like that scare a lot of entrepreneurs, because they're like, they've got this crazy big vision that they want to go make happen. And that's completely normal. But what this will do, you know, and for your team members, you know, if you have team members that are, you know, high level, tracking their time will be able to enable them to remove things from their plate so they can work on higher value areas. So this is absolutely, you know, critical and foundational. And that doesn't ever stop. That's, you know, ongoing. You know, whether you do it every, you know, couple of months, every 6 months, it's up to you. But the reality is, the more you're clear on where you're spending your time, because things evolve so quickly and things change rapidly, you know, you're going to have absolute clarity on, okay, well, what part of this 2 weeks that I've just spent time on is really not moving us forward? You know, So if you're working on just reactive things, fighting fires, and you're not, you know, you're answering customer service emails, you're tracking down shipments, you are doing things like, you know, talking and trying to reconcile your books, things like that, which are typically, you know, T. Harv Eker said that what usually happens is business owners, they spend 80% of their time in operations instead of 80% of their time on sales and marketing and strategy, which is what we need to flip around. And the faster you can do that and the more proactive you can be in that, you'll see your business absolutely explode, because you'll be focusing on opening up new marketplaces, launching new products, building, you know, systems around your, you know, the things that ultimately grow your business and put you on the path that you're looking for. Because I think a lot of the time we get stuck at, you know, a glass ceiling of growth, because it's 80% operations managing and you know, checking tasks and pushing them through. And a lot of people wonder how they can continue to grow without having more hours in the day. The simple answer is having team in place, you know, and structure and systems around the things which you can kind of offload.
Okay, so you just mentioned a few specific examples. So can you say from experience what kind of tasks you find Amazon business owners should be outsourcing? And also just more specifically, what things should you outsource first? Because we mentioned a few things. You've also mentioned the thing of you don't have to go from nothing to outsourcing everything. Yes, you should measure your time. So that's a critical reality check. But in general, because you've seen the patterns yourself now, would you say if you had to generalize, what's the one or two sort of areas that you should hire that first 5 or 10 hours a week of somebody's time for?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to be honest, it's going to be, I like to have somebody who can handle all of the customer service, all of the day-to-day that comes in, but also is capable to help me out in my kind of personal life as well. So hiring somebody like a PA, you know, a virtual PA is fine, just to help out with any life admin that you have, because frankly, there's a lot of that stuff that comes in. And, you know, also somebody can, you know, also help you with all of the customer service based activities, whether that's answering customer service emails within Amazon, you know, checking, responding to reviews, processing refunds, fulfillment orders, responding to your Facebook page messages, anything regarding forward facing, low value tasks like that, which you can easily, you know, put into a process and hand over to somebody else. So we can talk a little bit about how to do that tactically today. I'm, you know, definitely more than happy to do that. But usually it's somebody to lower the stress on you personally, but also to lower the incoming customer service based inquiries. And, you know, you can start there and then ramp up their responsibility over time. So they can start with the basics, answering customer service emails, responding to reviews, seller feedback. And then you can offload more of the high responsibility things onto their plate, like dealing with Amazon cases, you know, having processes in place for removing hijackers, things like that, which are, you know, can work into that. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And actually, I like the fact that, again, this is not an all or nothing proposition. You make it very, very clear that you can start off with something, anything that you can put in place as a simple process is the place to start. And then over time, you can ramp up the responsibility, but you don't have to hand your business over in one go. And I think that the two resistances to outsourcing that I sense in myself, and certainly in clients that I've worked with, and in mostly mastermind members now, is number one, the money. And you've got to think about the greater value of your time and have a longer vision than just purely the profit this month. And the second thing is that trust. And so we'll talk about that in a second. So who you hire and how you hire is obviously critical, but starting off with something that isn't mission critical is probably also good as well. And then ramping up to more complex things like how do you handle hijackers?
I mean, just on that note,
yes.
Just a little example is, let's say you are spending 10 hours a week on customer service and you're doing, that's 40 hours a month on customer service. But you know, if you remove that from your plate, you would have 40 hours to work on creating and launching a new product. And let's just assume that, you know, one product can bring you in £5,000 or $5,000 a month in gross revenue. Let's say $2,000 of that is, just to keep it simple, $2,000 of that is net profit. So if you were to work on launching one or two new products with that new 40 hours in that month, then that's a clear way on how you will bring in per product. If it's 5K revenue, then that is over 50K, yeah, 60K in revenue for the year. And that is just with one product. So removing that 40 hours from your plate allows you to focus on creating a product, which is literally going to generate 50K per time you do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And the thing is that people who are nervous about that should think about the business modeling, because really we are arbitraging the difference between being able to buy goods in bulk, because nobody probably normally needs 1,000 iPhone cases, but a business will buy that any day of the week. And also the arbitrage between Chinese factory costs and what consumers in the West will buy, wherever you're selling it. Actually, it doesn't matter where it is, but it's arbitrage between those two. So if we're not willing to arbitrage the difference between the value of our time and the value of a VA's time, that shows you have no faith in the fundamental act we're involved in, which is to say that you're going to have to buy things in at a certain value. And that business model only works if you then do something at the other end that has got more value. So it just struck me that it's really kind of a similar thing. You buy a VA's time at $5 an hour, and you do something that will generate enough revenue to be worth about $40 an hour of your time, right? So in other words, you've got to have some faith in the value you bring to your business in the first place.
And then if you do it. If you spend 40 hours on a task which can make you in a month, that can bring you in it's 60 grand for the year, then the hourly rate on that is way higher than focusing on customer service or process and refunds, or
I'm just trying to
doing
out,
your cleaning or
60,000 divided by 500, the hell is that? It's like $120 an hour or something. It's actually really very high when you think about that, the return on investment of actually a successful product. And even if you're cynical and you've been around the block and say, oh yeah, that works in theory, but not every product is a win. Okay, so look, maybe one product in three, and then it's $40 an hour as opposed to $5, which is customer service, right? You can't get around the maths of the thing that we have to focus on the higher value tasks.
If you spend 40 hours working on a product which generates you, you know, 50 grand in the year, then that's $1,250 per hour that works out. And again, it's never obviously perfect, but the point here, what we're saying is, when you consistently remove these things from your plate, that doesn't even have to come into your mind space. Then all you're focusing on is how you can improve your product launch system, how you can get better at launching products. So it's a compounding return of investment. If you're removing customer service, bookkeeping, inventory management, daily admin off your plate, then the things which are really important to grow the business, product creation, launch systems, growing your audience, going away from Amazon, building assets, you become better at them over time, which then you can use to make more money on and off of Amazon.
I think it's one of those things. Sorry to interrupt, but I just think it's so worth ramming the point home with people who are actually pretty good sellers and pretty, in some ways, very sophisticated business people, is that they get way too wrapped up in cash flow is critical and profit and losses as well, but they get wrapped up in being part of the machine that generates the cash, and that's addictive. But yeah, what you're getting better at if you do a lot of customer service is customer service. Whereas if you do a lot of product development, you get better at product development, and it's just a higher paid skill. Right, I guess, to summarize
absolutely
what you're saying,
the time tracker will tell you everything. You know, if you're spending, if you track, just say you tracked your time for the whole year every single day, and you had in one quarter massive growth, you can bet your money, or you know that if you look on the activities where that growth came from, it will be around profit generating activities. So there's a direct correlation, of course, on the where you're spending your time in your business, you know, the value that actually brings and the results that bring to your business. But because we are so in the forest, we can't see the forest, so to speak. You know, we're so close to the trees.
Yeah, you can't see the wood for the trees. Now, that's totally an issue for all small business people, I think. And that's one of the reasons why I run masterminds and why it's so valuable. I mean, these guys, you know, it's Q4. Like, I had a meeting on Wednesday with people, like one of the guys doing 7 million euros a year. And he's flown over from Europe to come to this mastermind, but he's out of the office. That's actually a good thing, because he's thinking bigger term, longer term, bigger picture, and that should be his job. So actually, yeah, there's a great value in stepping away from these things. So let's talk about then, so the value of the outsourcing versus the cost. So the cost is one barrier. The other one's the trust thing, and with reason, because you don't always get great people, right? And if you hand over something to somebody and they don't do well, that tends to be, in some cases, that's the nail in the coffin for people who are, oh, I tried outsourcing once, it didn't work. So obviously this is a primitive approach, but I'm just reflecting, you know, some of the reality that people seem to bring up. So the critical question next then is, how do you find good people?
Yeah, so I think it's a common challenge across, you know, so many, you know, online businesses, they've heard nightmare stories around outsourcing. It's just an area which just seems like a huge elephant that they don't know, you know, how to start taking chunks out of it. So I think it's crucial to get started with, first and foremost, identifying, you know, where you need help. So again, I'm going to keep going back to it, but understanding where you're spending your time on the time trackers can give you that information, which basically writes the job posting or the thing you need to hire for. That's a simple way to look at it. And I feel that if you do have a company which has a clear mission of where you're going and what's important in terms of, you know, company priorities for the year ahead, the quarter, and, you know, strategic planning in place, you can be clear that when somebody comes steps into your company, they're going to be absolutely clear on what the company is about, what it stands for, what's expect, you know, what role they're going to be filling, and what the outcomes they're responsible for. It starts that kind of far back. If you're bringing somebody, you know, in house, you know, or full time, then, you know, that's what you're going to need to set you up to have that hire be most productive and come on into your business with the most amount of success. If you're just hiring out a process or a part of that, then, you know, granted, you won't have to have that strong of a foundation in place in terms of your strategic planning, you know, where you're going for the year, quarters, month, and so forth. But that does really, really help. It starts off with having clarity around that, having clarity around the role that you're hiring for, and having a clear structured hiring process in place to filter out the people that, frankly, are good talkers, but are not good, you know, doers.
Interesting. So I guess my question implied, what's the hiring process? And your answer implied why you call your business systems and culture impact as opposed to just systems.com or whatever you might call it. Because I think what you've just said is really critical. Like, you've got to have a clear mission. You've got to have a strategic plan. What's your company stand for? What's the role about? What outcomes they want? And actually, this is to flip it on its head. I would say my experience of outsourcing as somebody that is not naturally very structured, but appreciates structure. It's funny because my background is a classical musician and I'm just a conductor, so, you know, and pianist. So they're famous, quite anal and structured about things. And yet, kind of in the end of the day, we're action oriented rather than process oriented. Well, I am. But the act of having to outsource to somebody means you have to articulate this stuff. And I think sometimes the act of articulating it is actually the true value. You might hire somebody who turns out to be a disaster, but going through the process of having to articulate, what are we actually trying to achieve? When I'm thrashing around on the computer on a spreadsheet for 10 hours a week, why the hell am I doing that? Actually, you might discover, it's like the Tim Ferriss thing, eliminate before you delegate. You might discover that what you're doing is pretty valueless and you shouldn't be doing it at all.
That's
which
so true.
Is really valuable, right, to discover that. I think that's like, but also what you just pointed out, and that's more mundane. Most people don't do it, but at least in theory, we get that. But what you just pointed out is more critical. Like, if you don't know what you stand for, if you don't know what a role is about, why do customer service? What outcome do you want? Then there's no way anyone's going to do it well. And that includes yourself, right? And when you hire somebody, it becomes more obvious. But that's been a problem all along. And I would say it shines a spotlight on what the hell you're doing all day anyway. So
yeah.
I really like the fact you brought that up. It's really critical.
Absolutely. So, you know, in terms of tactics of hiring, first and foremost, it starts with having clarity on what role you need to fill. You know, where do you need help? And the fastest way to do that is to be able to track your time. You know, if you do a download of all the things you've done over the last 2 weeks and look at your to-do list, that's going to give you a great clarity of, oh my God, I'm doing all this stuff and it's just driving me mad. It's keeping me away from X, Y, and Z, you know, growing my business, launching new products. And that's where it starts. That helps build your, you know, if it's your first hire, then that helps build the outcomes that new hire is going to be responsible for. So we've always used scorecards, which is outcome-based kind of like it's from a book, which is called Top Grading. It's a great book. It's been used across like huge organizations on how to effectively hire A players. And we took the scorecard concept from that, which is basically just talking about the specific outcomes this person is going to be responsible for. You know, what are the kind of requirements that they need to fulfill the role? And what is their role going to kind of entail? So we use that in terms of the beginning part of our hiring process. We obviously have a job posting, which is raising people's interest in the role, you know, which is people, frankly, you know, they want to know what's in it for them, right? So what will they get is, you know, you need to appeal to that with people in a job posting. When they apply, takes them to a scorecard, takes them through a bunch of questions. We usually have them do kind of a one and done task, which is a great way to filter if I talk about this in filtering through all the applications you get on different levels, you're going to end up with a few candidates which are really aligned with the outcomes that you're looking to achieve and also alignment of your culture or company culture. That's going to be the context there. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And just to reflect back, because I think this is critical stuff that people need to hear. I mean, by the way, if you want show notes for this, then we'll figure out how to put them up. But just for the moment, go to amazingfba.com/Aaron, A-A-R-O-N. If I got that right, it's Aaron with an O, isn't it? Not an A.
That's correct, yeah.
And obviously, we'll be getting a new blog up for the new podcast as well, but in sort of transition stage. But you sort of think it can be useful to see written down. But just to reflect back, for those who are listening in the car and need to get this stuff, you've got to clarify the role. And the best way to do that is look at your time tracking for the last 2 weeks and look at your to-do list. And if there's a gap, I guess, between your, I want to do this, but I'm doing this, that's obviously a big hint, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then have clear outcomes. And I like the scorecards from the top grading book. Sounds very interesting. Get very specific outcomes, requirements for the role, and define the role. And then the job posting is to raise interest and what's in it for me. Ask that question. When you apply, you have quite a few questions, I guess, normal enough. So I wanted to ask about the what questions to ask. But before I do that, what's this one and done task? How does that work?
Yeah, so great question. So what I will say is, if anyone wants to see an actual job posting that we have on our website, you can go to our website and find that. It's under Join Our Team. You can just see our process in there of what that looks like. So I think that'd be super helpful for guys and girls listening in terms of, you know, how we have our job posting, and we use a type form. We've automated our process with that. So we have a job posting, then type form, and within that type form, we extract all the questions and get all the information we need around the application. And in that has the scorecard embedded and all the referrals we need. And it also has a one and done task. So let me talk on that for a short second. So in terms of our one and done task, it's a task which they can complete pretty quickly, which is going to give you a lot of, you know, a lot of info around the type of person that has responded. So an example that we had a, for the customer service, it was actually for a customer love manager, somebody who's going to be able to manage a lot of customer service agents. So the question we had in that case was, I'm staying at this hotel in London. I think it was the Shangri-La in London. And I need 1,000 letters. I need to deliver 1,000 letters to go out international. Can you find the nearest post office to my hotel and give me directions? Something of that nature. So it tells, and this is what I'm talking about, you know, quick ways to filter through all of the applications. And that's what top grading does well. You know, the concept of hiring from top grading. And this is one of the first filters. The application basically is set up so if we don't have people fill it out, or if people don't provide referrals, or if people don't give us a, you know, anywhere near a good enough answer for the one and done task, they don't, you know, get through to the next stage of the hiring process. Some people would just answer, "Sure, sir, I'll get back to you," and that was it. Some people would go through the effort of creating step-by-step instructions, telling me exactly where I'm walking, give me screenshots from Google Maps of where to find that post office, and was just delivered in a really high level way in terms of, you know, customer service, because it was a customer service based role. Yeah. So immediately when I, you know, I was scanning for all these applications in type form, when once they've been, we had like 60 or 70, I was scanning through all of these, and then ones that were, that was kind of the first thing I'd look at is how they filled in the form and how they answered the question. If they didn't answer it well, then I'd just, you know, in our automation, I'll just move over to unsuccessful, and then they'd get an email sent out which says, "We're sorry, didn't make it through to the next round. Thank you so much for applying." If they made it through, they'd be moved over in our project management software to the next stage, and they would have a skills and aptitude test sent to them automatically. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I don't want to overcomplicate this too much, because I know it's kind of...
No, but it sounds pretty... I mean, to me, it sounds fairly straightforward. But I mean, if you, the trick is, as I was saying, the 10K Collective Mastermind the other day, look, I mean, it's like in the music profession. We audition, we don't interview. So I mean, like, if you want to go for a job as a pianist somewhere, or I used to be a French horn player professionally in orchestras, as you do, unusual background from an Amazon seller, but We all come from all different walks of life. And, you know, you don't go in there and have a chat for half an hour about how you would play this phrase. You go in there, say, hi, how are you? Yeah, good to see you. It's like 10-second conversation. Mm-hmm. And then here's the music, go. And then if they're crap, you can tell instantly. If they're good, you put them into the orchestra for a trial, which is something else I want to talk about. And you might be on trial for a job in an orchestra for a year. And there'd be two or three other people up for the same job. And then they pick one. Or if they didn't think anyone was good enough, they'd pick nobody. But it's all about how do you deliver in an individual situation like this, like on a task, and then how do you deliver in the team? And then it comes down to can you deliver or not? The conversations are pretty irrelevant because you're not being asked to talk to people anyway. So Absolutely. In a lot of ways, I think it's very familiar territory to me, and it's a very tried and tested thing. So I really like the fact that it's based around that. Totally. Talking of that, we can talk about the skills and aptitude test in a second, but I mean, tell me a little bit more about what I've just talked about. I mean, for me, the idea that you have two or three people trialing for a job and then you pick one is standard from the music industry, specifically the classical music industry. It's a funny little world that happens to be familiar to me. Is that something you do? Do you think that's too brutal? Do you think that's too confusing? What's your view on that?
It should be a tough decision. You know, if you've done this correctly and you've got the applications come in, there's going to be a small percentage of the people that are going to be fitting your culture. You know, you need to hire for culture first, as you know, that's kind of become cliche, but it's so true. Hire for, you know, the attitude that the person has, and obviously they need to be competent in the role and they need to be capable for sure. In terms of the question you asked, it should be tough to make a decision on who you're going to bring onto your company for sure. And if it's not, you know, if you don't have two or three people to compare, and I think you need to revisit the steps beforehand. So it should be difficult, because what people tend to do is just hire somebody. They don't run through a filtering process. I just want to give you the context again in terms of the stages of the hiring, so it's clear, which is what we've used. And there's a number of ways to do it. So what we do is we post the job posting, which has the scorecard involved, and basically retrieve all the information from their previous employers. There, it's kind of like they post their work history, they post references, and they give us a one and done task. That's the first stage. So if we have 60 applicants in that, I can quickly scan through each one and say, well, this person, I don't even have to read through half of them, because, you know, if they did a terrible job in filling out the form, then I just know that it's not going to work. So that's the first stage. The second stage is, you know, having them go through a personality test, a skills and aptitude test, which is really a great way to find out, you know, what they're competent in. So if it's a customer service based role, you can quickly find free tests, like 16 personalities, to tell you what kind of person they are. There's a great one called Criteria Corp, which is what we use, which is more higher level, but it is, it's a yearly thing that you pay for, but it's incredible. It's created by guys in Harvard. And it's like, it tells you, you can have a customer manager, customer service based skills and aptitude test. We get the results back from that, and that is very telling. And then the people that have made it through that, then we say, okay, the next is a 15-minute interview. If they pass that, then it's an hour tandem interview with, you know, me, a business partner, and another team member. And then, you know, at that point, you should have two or three people that you're, you know, trying to make a decision on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So just to clarify then the overall process, this is great stuff, by the way. I really like this. Very structured. It's always good. Stage one is they basically fill in the type form. So it's the scorecard, referrals, job history, and the one and done task, which you've explained really nicely. Second stage is for those who make it through the aptitude and skills test. Stage three, 15-minute interview. Stage four, tandem interview. I like that. I've never heard of that. Bicycle made for two and interview made for two, I guess. I like it. And then, yeah, you got, so you, and at the end of that, you have two or three really qualified candidates. What do you do then about this, to come back to this idea that I had, because it's not just me that does this, that somebody else was saying in the group, you know, hire four, fire three, keep one. I mean, it's a bit brutal to go in knowing that that might happen, but do you advocate or use the thing of giving people trial periods, and do you trial more than one person for the same kind of job?
The way you should kind of always hire, if you're bringing somebody into your business, you've put them through this rigorous hiring process, which we just talked about, you know, job posting, scorecards, skills and aptitude test, 15-minute interview, 1 hour tandem interview, you know, with another, you know, two or three team members. And that should get you somewhere, you know, near. And if you've got somebody come into the team, you're going to want to know how they perform within the team and how everybody else feels about them as well. So I would recommend having, you know, either a 2 week to get you going, just say, we're going to try it for 2 weeks. And if things are good, then we're going to then extend that to a 3 month probation period where we're seeing how we work together. And then we'll just roll in after that. So it's important that you clarify that up front to them, you know, and give that visibility ahead of time for sure. But usually if you've done this right, and if you've gone through that process, which I've just explained, then you're going to be, you know, somewhere very near.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why I suppose people have to be sort of brutal choose to be rather sort of crude and hire. I mean, I have just literally hired 3 people for the same kind of role, is too grand a word, but the same kind of tasks, I guess, processes before, just as a tryout. But I guess it's a version of your one and done thing. But yeah, if you have to hire a lot of people and then fire a lot of people, it probably does mean you're not filtering people out that effectively. It's sort of filtering at the end rather than early. And your process sounds like it's pretty thorough. So you're trying to filter out people early on. And also, if you're very clear about your own culture and the role and what you need as outcomes, and then you communicate that clearly, which is 2 different forms of art to get good at, I guess, then that also helps, right? If you're clear in your own mind, if you're clear to other people, you then have a structured process to get to the people who are doing that. I guess by the time you've done all that, you shouldn't need to, you know, be firing people left, right, and center all the time anyway. And as you said, if you've got a 2 week tryout and then a 3 month tryout, it's sort of gradually committing over time rather than, right, we've done this, now we're in. Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for Kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.